Thank you so much, Dolores. Our last speaker is Rafif Ziada from Toronto. Rafif is a third generation Palestinian refugee.
Sorry, not from Toronto. She came on the train this morning, but that doesn't mean anything. Rafif is a third generation Palestinian refugee. She's from Palestine and is a member of the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid and Samud, a political prisoner organization in Toronto, a spoken word artist, and a political science student. So over to you.
You just gave me my great opening that I always open with, and I like to say my name is Rafif Ziada. I'm a refugee from occupied Palestine, soon to be free Palestine. Organizing this event. I've been organizing Apartheid Week in Toronto now for 5 years, and happy to say that in its fifth year, Israeli Apartheid Week is happening in 40 cities around the world. It started in Toronto, went to Montreal the next year, and this year we have grown to 40 cities. And I'm sure people have heard of the chorus of voices trying to shut it down, but the fact that we are all here today is a testament to the amazing organizers who keep putting on these events day in and day out and will keep speaking truth to power. And Israeli apartheid will not end. We have made sure that it will not end until Israeli apartheid ends. In coming to question what I'm supposed to speak about today, a lot of people said, well, people are wondering why feminists would have anything to say about Palestine. I mean, feminists, aren't they concerned with women's issues and women's right to choose and such topics? And Palestine and international relations have nothing to do with feminism, which is truly, truly shocking to me in this day and age that that is still an argument that can be used in order to make sure that feminists don't sponsor things like Israeli Apartheid Week. So I wanted to start with a little bit of what I would say my framework of what feminism should look like in the context of Palestine. Just broad outlines of what it would be that we're talking about in this context. Simply speaking, feminism is not simply about fighting for quotas for how many women should sit in parliament. It's for fighting against deep-rooted social patterns of capitalist reproduction and patriarchy that exist in our society. Apartheid is very much in that spirit of patriarchy and capitalist social reproduction. Also, an understanding of feminism has to be rooted in the fact that it's women who bear the brunt of conflicts, but they're also the active agents in fights for liberation. And that leads to the fact that feminism needs to bring out the narrative of the oppressed. In this case, the silenced Palestinian women that you never hear their stories, you never hear their voice, but you always hear the voice of the oppressors and what they have to say. So it's incumbent upon feminists to bring out the narrative of the oppressed. But in saying this, I want to note that every time we bring out the narrative of the oppressed and we talk about Palestinians, we are asked about the balance. I almost feel that as a Palestinian woman, I need to be shadowed by someone who's Israeli in order to be able to speak. That is the only time when my voice is legitimate, is when there is balance. And that is the equivalent of saying that every time a black South African woman had to speak, she needed to have a white South African woman speaking next to her who was pro-apartheid in order to be heard. And we reject that completely. But having said that, we absolutely do not reject debates on the nature of Israel's and apartheid state, and we are more than happy to have them. There is a difference between having dialogue that is balanced versus having debates on the issue. And we put out a challenge to any feminist Zionists to have a debate with us, and so far they have refused. An understanding of feminism also needs to be rooted in an anti-racist feminism, where we know that liberating women doesn't come from Western powers on their F-16s and their tanks, but it actually comes from being in solidarity with the women themselves. And in this case, Palestinian women federations and Palestinian women have very directly put out a call for boycotts, divestments, and sanctions. It is the call coming from Palestinian women, and if we're in solidarity with Palestinian women, that is what they're asking for. They are at the forefront of their struggle. They are not asking for charity. We are asking for solidarity in the form of boycotts, divestments, and sanctions. a feminism has to realize that the connection between women is not just a standard biological connection because we happen to be born with a certain biology. It's about the power relations between women and among women, but that there is also a difference between a woman who's indigenous and a woman who's a settler. There's a huge difference. Many times when Palestinians are asked to speak or to do projects, we are asked that, you know, the way out and the way forward for peace is for Israeli and Palestinian women to sit together and to speak, and peace is just going to phenomenally come about when we sit together. It is not about me sitting with an Israeli that considers that I'm not human that's going to bring about peace. It is actually, it might be sitting with anti-Zionist Jewish women who consider me human and believe in my right to return. And that, again, is being in solidarity with Palestinian women and not the opposite. So recognizing that it's not just a biological connection and that there's this chemistry that needs to essentially happen between Israeli and Palestinian women, there is a power dynamic and a dynamic of indigenous versus settler. Feminism also has to oppose militarism. Militarism in all its forms has to oppose patriarchal nationalism in all its forms. But yet, it does not equate the violence of the oppressor with the violence of the oppressed. Feminists are often asked to condemn all violence all the time. And if you're Palestinian, every time you open your mouth, you need to say, I condemn all violence in all forms, because I have to condemn all violence in all forms. Otherwise, you're not going to listen to the next sentence I'm going to say, because I haven't condemned violence in all forms. And if you're Palestinian, you should also mention Gandhi and Martin Luther King as many times as you can in a speech to show that you understand what nonviolence is about. So here we are, from that framework, speaking about Israeli apartheid. Apartheid in itself, the word means separation. Now, it doesn't take a genius to look at the map of Palestine today and realize that it's identical to the map of South Africa under apartheid. I encourage everyone to visit the West Bank, and I would say Gaza, but most of you here wouldn't be allowed into Gaza, but I would say it just takes one visit to the West Bank to recognize that it's an apartheid system. When Palestinians have to pass through checkpoints, where they need specific papers, when 51 Palestinian women have had to give birth at checkpoints because Israeli soldiers aren't letting them go through, that is a system of apartheid. But in the BDS movement, in the Boycotts, Divestment, and Sanctions movement, we're not only talking about Israeli apartheid in the occupied territories, but also in what is today called Israel proper itself. The fact that Palestinian citizens of Israel are discriminated against. And feminists should be very concerned about this because Palestinian women, citizens of Israel, of course Israel likes to call them Arabs, they don't like to identify them as Palestinian, but they are highly discriminated against in jobs, in the education, in every aspect of their life they are discriminated against, and those are citizens of the state. Of course, Israel also remains an apartheid state because it doesn't allow Palestinian refugees like myself to return to our homes and lands from which we were ethnically cleansed in 1947-48. It is these three groups of Palestinians, the Palestinian refugees, the Palestinians within the occupied territories, and Palestinian citizens of Israel that constitute, and those of us in the diaspora, that constitute the Palestinian nation that is living under apartheid. That is living in Bantustans in the West Bank, but also under a system of apartheid because we're not allowed to return. Specifically on women and Israel's view of women. Very directly, I am considered a demographic threat to the state of Israel. What does that actually mean? Let us actually deconstruct the words of the Israeli state when they have centers in their universities that are for studying demographic. It means myself in my body, because it could bear a Palestinian child, I'm a demographic threat because more Palestinians could be born. I mean, Golda Meir was right that she cried every time she heard a Palestinian child was born. It's because the Palestinian woman herself is considered an enemy of the state because she's considered a demographic threat. And if that is not something that the feminist movement should take up and realize the racism inherent within it, then something is really wrong. Interestingly, and I'm very happy we started with the reading of the Statement of Indigenous Solidarity, because the same was applied to indigenous women here on Turtle Island. There were demographic centers to study the child birth rates of indigenous women. And interestingly, the system of apartheid that was implemented in South Africa was studied here on Turtle Island and taken, and the blueprint was taken from the reserves here to be implemented in South Africa. And then Ariel Sharon and others from Israel went to South Africa, studied that blueprint, and are implementing it on us today in Palestine. It's very clear from just the basics of how the apartheid system works, how it's very much the enemy of every single Palestinian woman, not just from the giving birth at checkpoints, but just from the daily humiliation faced by Palestinians. I know Gaza is on everyone's mind today because with Gaza we saw the brutality of the Israeli state front and center. We saw them just coming out with all the weapons, turning Gaza into their laboratory. But Gaza itself was under siege long before the bombing, and no one said a word. And Canada was the first state to cut aid from the Palestinian Authority, democratically elected, but democracy doesn't work apparently in the West when we elect the wrong people. The first country to cut aid and make sure that Palestinians within Gaza live under a siege that completely crippled the Gaza Strip, and no one was saying a word. And that is when we need a feminist movement to be able to speak truth to power, to be able to stand up and say, why is this actually the case and why is this happening? But we know how Israel treats Palestinians. I know, since I was born, that I'm a target for the Israeli state. I grew up in a refugee camp. My own grandparents were killed before ever being able to return to Palestine on the hands of militias trained by Israel. So how the Israeli state treats Palestinians and Palestinian women is really clear. But there's a very interesting dynamic that happens within Israeli society on the manipulation of feminism itself, and I think this is where we really have to be alert. Because we are told that it is such a great feat for feminists around the world that Tzivi Livni is actually in power. How lucky are we? The feminist movement has won, and we have a war criminal that's able to be in power. I mean, aren't we all really, really proud? The Israeli military, a few years ago, cued into how great it is to have women as military spokespeople. And they very openly said that this is good because it's softer on the eye. Because when you want to talk about creating an apartheid wall and imprisoning people and 11,000 political prisoners and torture and starvation, and your ministers are saying things like we need to put Gazans on a diet but not kill them, then it's good to have a woman's face on the TV screen to break that news to the world in very eloquent terms. I don't know how many people saw this, but a while ago Israel was trying to rebrand itself because apparently the Israeli brand of apartheid is not doing too hot around the world, thanks to a lot of activists. So in rebranding itself, Israel decided to use women in the Israeli military, dress them in military bikinis, and put them in men's magazines. And this was consistent for a while. And this was supposed to be a way to attract people to the image of Israel and how glorious Israel is. So the exploitation of women's bodies becomes inherent in this rebranding campaign of trying to make Israel acceptable to the world. And of course, many people have heard this, and I've heard this many times. People walk up to me after I finish speaking about Palestine and they say, but you know, Israel is on the forefront of the feminist movement because women serve in the military. Because when Palestinians are standing at a checkpoint and it's a woman soldier, it actually makes a huge difference to the feminist movement, apparently, if it's a woman soldier or a man soldier. That's the kind of information we are given to show that Israel is a feminist state. But what is this in opposed to? And here's where you see the double standard. If we're going to talk about Israel as an apartheid state, we need to see the racism inherent in apartheid. We need to see that the Palestinians here are seen as non-human, our stories don't exist, and our history doesn't exist. What they say is, it's a land without a people for a people without a land. Unfortunately, that land had people living on it, and it was us Palestinians. But we are erased from history. Coupled with that racism, add your general Western Orientalism against Arabs and people of the Orient. And on top of that, add your standard Islamophobia against Palestinian women, even though there are many Palestinian Christians, but we're all seen as one blob of people. You put all these things together, inherent racism within apartheid, Orientalism and Islamophobia, and Palestinian women completely lose their voice. Even though we have been at the forefront of our liberation struggle, and not just in the occupied territories, in the refugee camps in Lebanon. And if you look at the BDS movement here in the diaspora, it is also led by Palestinian women mostly. But we are completely erased from that picture. And why the hell not? I mean, Israeli women get to serve in the military, so they're clearly more advanced than we will ever be. And I want to bring this a little bit home, because I think the effects of this that are happening on the organizing here are really starting to matter. We often talk about Palestine and Israel as spaces that are over there. Unfortunately, with apartheid, its racism tends to burst out and spill over in very disgusting ways. Excuse me, I've been having to face it at Toronto all week this week. Israeli Apartheid Week this year has seen one of the most vicious attacks against it yet. The poster was banned in Carleton University and the University of Ottawa, in Laurier University, and it's on its way to be banned in Trent University. And the reason they're giving us for this is equity. I think feminists need to be really disturbed by this, the use of the language of equity to shut down debate on Palestine. They are saying that somehow these posters, someone might see them and they might incite violence in some way, so we have to shut them down. So they're shutting down the debate on Israeli apartheid in those terms. Now, interestingly, when women organizers have been harassed on campuses, there has never been a follow-up on our harassment. On my own campus, York University, when we were doing a direct action, we were pretending we were Palestinian citizens and there were Israeli soldiers. I, of course, took the role of a Palestinian citizen. We were lying on the floor and I came and I was kicked in the gut by some very nice gentleman, Zionist gentleman, who said, "You deserve to be raped before you have your terrorist children." Now, this is just one small incident of how their racism spills outside of the borders of Israel into campuses here. But the other side of it is nothing was done about that. And in organizing with students against Israeli apartheid, consistently now for a number of years, women organizers, and in particular women of color organizers, are consistently targeted by Zionists on campus. We are kicked, we are shoved, we are pushed, we are assaulted, they put cameras in our faces, and university administrations don't do anything about that. Yet, and this is where the double standard really emerges, when we produce a poster that is essentially a factual poster, there were children killed in Gaza. The Israeli military killed children in Gaza. Now, this wasn't condemned. No one condemned the actual killing of the children, but they are condemning the poster about the killing of the children. So it's easier to condemn a poster than actually condemn the acts. And this double standard is really, really terrifying, and we need to start to do something about it. In Toronto, we're starting to see the Jewish Defense League organizing. The Jewish Defense League is considered a terrorist organization even in Israel and in the United States, not in Canada yet. We'll see where they go with that. We're seeing them starting to organize against us in extremely racist ways. And again, the racism spills not just on Palestinians, but other supporters as well. Yesterday at a rally at York, we had a Punjabi comrade who was supporting us, and he was speaking Punjabi. And one of the members of the JDL told him, "We don't speak that in Canada. You only speak that in your houses. Here you either speak English or French." So this is really spreading and becoming the fight of our times for freedom of expression and freedom of dissent. It is becoming everyone's fight to regain our spaces on campuses and to show the complicity of the Canadian state with what's going on with Israeli apartheid. As I said, Canada was the first state to cut funding from the Palestinian Authority. During the bombing of Lebanon, Harper had the audacity, when Lebanon was being carpet bombed, to get up and say this was a measured response. In the latest bombings of Gaza, what the Harper government was saying essentially was, this is the Palestinians' fault, they brought this upon themselves, they deserve what they're getting, essentially was the message we were hearing from the government, even though consistently there were thousands of people on the streets protesting against the bombing. So it is this double standard that makes it a priority for every feminist to speak against a state that is supporting apartheid in our name. A state that is complicit in apartheid in our name must be challenged and must be stopped. There's no other way around it. There's no way about doing it. And the way we've been asked to do that, the call has come from Palestine for a boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign. And the campaign is very straightforward. There's nothing complicated about it. And the demands are pretty simple and rational. Any person who believes in basic human justice would understand that these demands are simple. One, to end the occupation. Not a big deal, right? International law, end the occupation, get the hell out of our territories. Number two, equality for Palestinian citizens of Israel. If Israel wants to claim itself as a democracy, then it needs to treat all its citizens equally. One of the basics of democracy, right? All citizens are equal. Did I miss something in my introduction to 101 political science? No, okay, all citizens are equal. And three, the right of return for Palestinian refugees, and this is the one they get really testy about. And I want people to think about this for a second. What are they so scared of? People like myself going back home? Do I look that scary? And they say that will mean the end of the existence of the state of Israel as it is today. Well, let me break the news to you. The state of Israel as it exists today is an apartheid racist state. And if the right of return means that the apartheid system ends, then by all means, let's end this apartheid and get on with our lives with a little justice instead of the racism we've been facing. So the boycott, divestment, and sanctions call from Palestine is very clear. It is very clear that we have to start acting and start acting really soon because Gaza is only the blueprint for what's going to happen in the West Bank. The Gaza ghetto is simply the blueprint for what we're going to see in the future. The continuation of the wall, the surroundings and the siege, the theft of land, the manipulation of movement on every level, the continuation of political imprisonment for no reason. It is simply the blueprint, the Bantustan apartheid blueprint. And Palestinians have put out a call to the rest of the world to stop the complicity of our governments here in the West and our institutions. Because again, when it comes to boycotts, everyone freaks out of how can you condemn the Israeli Academy and what about freedom of expression? Now, mind you, freedom of expression for Palestinians doesn't matter. And freedom of expression for Palestinian organizers on campuses doesn't matter. But freedom of expression for Israeli academics, now that's up there. Look at that double standard. That's every university president in Canada signed a letter to support their freedom of expression. And not a single university president in Canada dared to sign a piece of paper to condemn the bombing of a university in Gaza. What does that tell all of us? That these institutions are complicit in aiding Israeli apartheid. And that it is incumbent on us as students, as professors, as activists, as people in our communities to make sure that these connections are ended and are cut and that we're able to speak out about it. We have two fights on our hands. One, to open up the spaces to debate these topics freely and openly. Criticizing Israel is not anti-Semitic and it is not hate speech, and we will continue to organize to bring out the truth about the apartheid nature of Israel. That is our first fight. But our second fight is to make sure that boycotts, divestments, and sanctions are implemented. But the way to go about that is to be really thorough and really specific. Our research and being very clear about what we are targeting and why we are targeting really matters. Because it's very clear our movement is growing. Canadian Union of Public Employees, Ontario, just passed a resolution on the academic boycott. Canadian Union of Postal Workers has a resolution on boycott, divestments, and sanctions. This movement is growing, but in order for it to grow in a healthy way, we need to continue organizing, to continue our research being really detailed, and to make sure that our environments are continuously free of hate and that we all support each other in front of all this racism and the attacks that we are getting. That's why I'm extremely proud of the organizers and really proud to say that I belong to this movement that is truly anti-racist and truly fights for social justice. I think it's simple. Palestinians have put out their call. any feminist around the world needs to be an active member in the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign until Palestine is free, as I am sure it will be. Thank you.